I really want to focus in this first segment about the status quo, what's happening now, sort of what the conventional wisdom is. You make it very clear in the book what people are thinking, and with President Bush signing the $350 billion in tax cuts and also going into tremendous debt, I forget the number exactly, something like $984 billion increase in the federal debt limit to pay for this, it's very clear that both Democrats and Republicans believe the way to go is not local. The way to go is the way that we've been going. And it's not just Republicans. It's not just conservative Republicans, but it's also Democrats as well. They argued that, no, $500 billion of tax breaks is too much. Let's make it $350 billion. Sure, there were some examples saying this is crazy. This is trickle-down economics. It didn't work anymore. But that's basically the status quo.
That's right. And I think the problem exists in both political parties. I think the Democrats still have, at least, you know, core Democrats, a romance about federal programs saving the day. And what I believe is that, in fact, most federal spending is regressive. It's either for the military or for corporate welfare. And that, you know, those who just say, you know, we just need to get the federal government to look a little bit more like Sweden or Germany, and then, you know, all of our problems will be solved. It's just very naive in the context of the United States, in a country with 285 million people. The Republicans, while superficially favoring devolution, in fact favor the destruction of public policy at all levels of governance. So someone like me, who favors strong municipal and state governments to be the centerpiece for economic development and various kinds of social programs, really have no place with either of the kind of conventional lines of thinking.
Perhaps the subject of your next book is what we're talking about here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Democratic Secretary of Labor, Robert Reich, with the Clinton administration, said that the tight connection between the company, its community, and even its country is gone.
And Reich was simultaneously being descriptive, and it is true that that loyalty has been disconnected, but he also was being prescriptive. He was advocating that this is great, and so every community now needs to see itself as an attractor of talent and companies that are circulating the globe, shopping around for their best locale. And the problem is that it turns every community into kind of like a rape victim. What a naive advice to a rape victim is, which is, you know, sit back and enjoy it. You have no other alternative to these, you know, pillaging global corporations.
And these are not just the football teams that say, build us a stadium or we'll move. And we know a little bit about that here in Seattle.
That's right.
But it's also corporations like Disney who say, you know, we're going to move Disneyland after 50 years.
That's right. I mean, Disneyland basically said, give us $1 billion or we're out of here. And they got $1 billion from the state of California. The New York Stock Exchange got $1 billion to preempt a move to New Jersey or Connecticut. And so this kind of extortion is going on all the time. But, you know, there's two problems with this. One is that if you win the competition or if you pay the bribes, it raises serious questions about what it means to win this competition. The second problem is that everyone is a loser because, as the example we talked about earlier with BMW underscores, the winners often are sacrificing labor and environmental standards.
And local culture is what you're talking about. You say in
yes.
the book, you believe the modern large corporation destroys local culture.
That's right. I mean, the box store mentality, when you can go to Florence and find that, you know, the traditional kinds of small shops are being gradually displaced by the same, you know, Office Max, McDonald's, Dunkin' Donuts that you see everywhere else in the United States, it is a horrifying sight.
Aren't Americans just now seeing the kinds of things that have been going on in third world countries for decades?
Well, I think it's been going on in the United States for decades, too. I mean, we have a long history in this country of major corporations, you know, whether it was the railroad barons or the coal mine town type characters that have, you know, really been very insensitive to local culture and local community. But it is paradoxical that at this time when we think of ourselves as the most powerful nation on the planet, we're able to exercise our military will anywhere we want, that in fact we are increasingly powerless to these sort of private capitalists who just come in and out of our communities and wreck culture, families, and ecosystems with no consequence.
You cite the destruction of community-based family farming as one example of how the emphasis on bigger is better doesn't really work. And while someone listening who maybe works for Microsoft or Boeing or a large corporation and has for years and has stock in it and has some security, when it comes to food, we've really given away our security. And to whom? To marketers and truckers, basically.
Yeah. I mean, and actually, the next book that I'm likely to write, and I've been gathering information on this in the last couple of years, is tentatively called Amazing Shrinking Machines. And the idea of the book is that economies of scale of production are getting smaller and smaller. So it used to be that you needed a very large set of companies, a very large company, to produce complex goods and services. And just as the broadcast station that we're in right now is you and a microphone and an internet site, I believe that more and more goods and services can be produced by people operating by themselves or in small groups. One of the great examples of small-scale succeeding economically is food. Here are some fascinating statistics that back in the year 1900, when a dollar was spent at a market, basically 40 cents went to the farmer. The rest went to inputs and marketing. Today, when you spend a dollar on food, something like 9 cents goes to the farmer. 67 cents goes to marketing. And by marketing, I mean things like refrigeration, packaging, middle people, advertising, things that have nothing to do with food. What's fascinating about those numbers is that means that even very inefficient farming, local farming that, say, costs not 9 cents but 18 cents, if it's coupled with greatly reduced distribution, say you're distributing directly through a community-supported agriculture network locally, you get rid of all that 67 cents of garbage, you put together the more expensive farming and the much reduced distribution, and you can have cheaper food. So I believe that actually community-based food systems are the economic wave of the next generation.
And you haven't even talked about organics or the lack of genetic engineering. Genetic integrity, I guess, is the term. And we can perhaps get into that in our next segment.